नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायिषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवतसेवया भगवति उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी कृष्णे स्वधामोपगते धनमज्ञानादिभिः सह कलौ नष्टदृशाम् एष पुराणार्कोऽधुनोदितः नाशम् निशम्य पुत्राणाम् नारदात् शीलशालिनाम् अनु अतप्यत् कः शोचत् सुप्रजस्त्वम् शुचाम् पदम् This is Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 5, Text Number 23. The chapter is entitled Narad Muni Cursed by Prajapati Daksha. And, of course, this is text number 23.
Nasham Nishamya Putranam Naradat Chila Shalinam Anuatapyatakah Shocham Suprajastvam Shuchampadam Nasham Nishamya Putranam Naradat Chila Shalinam Anvatapyatakah Shocham Suprajastvam Shuchampadam Nasham Nishamya Putranam नारदाच्छिलशालिनाम् अन्वतप्यतकशोचन् सुप्रजस्त्वं शुचाम्पदम् नाशं निशम्य पुत्राणाम् नारदाच्छिलशालिनाम् अन्वतप्यतकः शोचन् सुप्रजस्त्वं शुचाम्पदम् नाशं निशम्य पुत्राणाम् नारदाच्छीलशालिनाम् अन्वतप्यतकः शोचन् सुप्रजस्त्वं शुचाम्पदम् नाशं निशम्य पुत्राणाम् नारदाच्छीलशालिनाम् उपतप्यत कशौचन् सुप्रजस्त्वं शुचाम्पदम् नाशं निशम्य पुत्राणाम् नारदाच्छीलशालिनाम् अन्वतप्यतकशोचन् सुप्रजस्त्वं शुचाम्पदम् नाशं निशम्य पुत्राणाम् नारदाच्छीलशालिनाम् अन्वतप्यतकशोचन् सुप्रजस्त्वं शुचाम्पदम्
Ladies.
Nasham Nishamya Putranam Narada Chila Shalinam Anvata Pyataka Shochan Suprajastvam Shuchampadam Nasham,
the loss.
Nishamya,
hearing of.
Putranam,
of his sons.
Naradat,
from Narad.
Shilashalinam,
who were the best of well-behaved persons.
Anvatapyata,
suffered.
Kah,
Prajapati Daksha.
Shochan,
lamenting.
Suprajastvam,
having 10,000 well-behaved sons.
Shucham,
of lamentation.
Padam,
position.
Translation.
The Hariashvas, the sons of Prajapati Daksha, were very well-behaved, cultured sons. But unfortunately, because of the instructions of Narad Muni, they deviated from the order of their father. When Daksha heard this news, which was brought to him by Narad Muni, he began to lament. Although he was the father of such good sons, he had lost them all. Certainly this was lamentable. Please repeat. The Hariashvas, the sons of Prajapati Daksha, were very well-behaved, cultured sons. But unfortunately, because of the instructions of Narad Muni, they deviated from the order of their father. When Daksha heard this news, which was brought to him by Narad Muni, he began to lament. Although he was the father of such good sons, he had lost them all. Certainly this was lamentable. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, Founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. The Hariashvas, the sons of Prajapati Daksha, were certainly well-behaved, learned, and advanced. And in accordance with the order of their father, they went to perform austerities to beget good sons for their family. But Narad Muni took advantage of their good behavior and culture to properly direct them not to be involved with this material world, but to use their culture and knowledge to end their material affairs. The Hariashvas abided by the order of Narad Muni, but when news of this was brought to Prajapati Daksha, the Prajapati, instead of being happy with the actions of Narad Muni, was extremely sorrowful. So Prajapati Daksha was very sorry to hear this news. Similarly, we are trying to bring as many young men as possible to the Krishna consciousness movement for their ultimate benefit. But the parents of the young men joining this movement, being very sorry, are lamenting and making counter-propaganda. Of course, Prajapati Daksha did not make propaganda against Narad Muni. But later, as we shall see, Daksha cursed Narad Muni for his benevolent activities. This is the way of materialistic life. A materialistic father and mother want to engage their sons in begetting children, striving for improved economic conditions and rotting in materialistic life. They are not happy when their children become, they are not unhappy when their children become spoiled, useless citizens, but they lament when they join the Krishna consciousness movement to achieve the ultimate goal of life. This animosity between parents and the Krishna consciousness movement has existed since time immemorial. Even Narad Muni was condemned, not to speak of others. Nevertheless, Narad Muni never gives up his mission to deliver as many fallen souls as possible. He continues playing his musical instrument and vibrating the transcendental sound, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Classic Srila Prabhupada purport. Nasham Nishamya Putranam Naradat Chilashalinam Anuvatapyataka Shochan Suprajastvam Shucham Padam. The Hariyashvas, the sons of Prajapati Daksha, were very well-behaved, cultured sons, but unfortunately, because of the instructions of Narad Muni, they deviated from the order of their father. When Daksha heard this news, which was brought to him by Narad Muni, he began to lament. Although he was the father of such good sons, he had lost them all. Certainly, this was lamentable. Om Agnana Timirantasya Gnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Nama Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Lankayate Girim Yat Kripatamaham Vande Shri Gurum Dinataranam. Madeka Bantomat Sangin Mad Guru Man Mahatana Man Nistarka Mad Bhagyam Mad Ananda Namostate. Here we have a textbook case, you might say, of the worst kind of conflict that exists. Those who are professionals in the realm of alternative dispute resolution, mediation, if you will, a very common thing in this age of quarrel and strife, Kali Yuga. Kali means Kalaha, quarrel. So we are always disagreeing with one another. We are always in conflict with one another about this or about that. And here we see this is a perennial problem that comes up throughout the Vedic literatures, not only here in Srimad Bhagavatam, but in other places as well. There's this eternal conflict between those who feel that what is auspicious is Pravritti Marg and those who feel that what is auspicious is the Nivritti Marg. That is to say, some people feel that the auspicious course is to be very proactive and be very active and be very hands-on and tangible and involved in this world in which we, after all, took birth for some purpose. And on the other hand, there are those who also recognize with equal validity that all material affairs are ultimately useless, that there's really no point in getting entangled because it very often distracts one from the ultimate goal of life, which is spiritual realization. What is the worst kind of conflict that exists? It's when you have a situation where there's a clear case of right versus wrong, then that's pretty easy. Nobody will argue if someone is pushing for the inauspicious. But when you have different opinions about what is right, then it causes a problem. So right versus right conflicts, these are the very worst kind of conflicts, and that's exactly what we're looking at here. You cannot say that Prajapati Daksha is wrong in his concerns. He's been ordered by Lord Vishnu. He's doing his prescribed duty. He's in the right position. And you cannot say that Narad Muni is wrong as well, because his activities also are solidly based on the conclusion of all the shastras, Vedanta. Veda means the end of all the Vedas, the ultimate conclusion. So how is this thing going to be resolved? These things are relevant also, because in our own lives, especially amongst devotees, we see that we have many conflicts about what does Prabhupada want, for example. Everyone is equally committed to his course of action. There's a nice verse in the 11th canto. It's 11th canto, chapter 22, text number 34, if I'm not mistaken. There, the Lord is instructing Uddhava, and he says, Atma aparijnana mayo vivado. When you have a conflict or an argument that is based on incomplete realization of the self, Atma aparijnana mayo vivado. Parijnana maya means it's based on full realization, but aparijnana maya means your argument is based on partial realization. We have that famous story of the five blind men and the elephant. They're all touching a different part, and they're all describing a different thing. They're all describing the same thing, and yet it's different because aparijnana maya vivada. Their arguments are based on incomplete realization. So it is with us. Who here can raise his hand when I ask if you have perfectly realized the Supreme Absolute Truth? I don't think any of us will do that. The Jains, atheistic faith, for what that's worth, it's actually a perversion of the teachings of Rishabhadeva, whom we know from the fifth count of the Srimad Bhagavatam. They have a very, politically correct way of looking at life. Their approach to life is very mature from a postmodern mindset. They call this Syadvad, the philosophy of Syat. What does Syat mean in Sanskrit? It means it could be. They have this open-mindedness that this person may have something valid to teach me, so let me at least give him some quarter. Let me at least be open-minded about it. So at least in that respect, we can learn something from the Jains. We can learn something from everyone, but we can't learn everything from just anyone. So let's look at what some of the acharyas have said about this verse. Nasha, the first word of the verse, nasha. What does it mean? One of those easy words in Sanskrit that everybody knows. Destruction. But there's difference of opinion about what is being destroyed here. What does it mean to be, what is that destruction? Sridhar Swami, the august and original commentator on the Bhagavatam, whom we always look to for the meaning of these words, he says this means adarshanam swadharma bhrangsham va. That means either the destruction was that Daksha could no longer see these children because they had all gone off and presumably become sannyasis. Or swadharma bhrangsha. They have ruined their own swadharma. Their swadharma is generally the course of action is that one follows the orders of one's parents, one is engaged according to one's varnashrama duties, and that's how they were engaged, and yet they gave it up. All the acharyas agree on this, but it's a question of what is one's ultimate duty. There's one's relative duty in this material world. That's called swadharma, in accordance with one's swabhava. It always corresponds to the swabhava. And then there is one's parodharma, or one's sanatan dharma, or one's jiva dharma, one's eternal function. So Krishna consciousness or nivritti marga is based on the eternal function of the soul, whereas all other dharmas are based on the temporal function of the body, which is not to say that they're unimportant. The duality in this material world is every bit as important as the duality in the spiritual world, because potentially it's equally divine if we are properly engaged. That's called yukta vairagya by Gaudiya Vaishnava acharyas. And in that respect, I was reading from Katha Upanishad the other day. There's one nice verse there that says there's not much distinction between the material world and the spiritual world in that respect. If one is, parijnana maya, if one is atma parijnanamaya, full of complete realization. That's usually not the case. Therefore, we have to grapple with duality. How? In accordance with Svadharmas. So this is one thing. Now, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he fine-tunes this general thought. He says, Nasham Vaishnavatvam eva. That destruction is that they have become Vaishnavas. That is, and then he clarifies that statement. He says, Grihasthanam mate nashastam. That thing is considered to be destruction from the point of view of the grihastha. If someone becomes a devotee, and particularly if he becomes one of the renounced devotees, if you look at the Varnashram system, most of the orders are to one degree or another renounced. The brahmacharis are renounced, they're learning, they're surrendering to the spiritual master and absorbing what he has to give. The vanaprasthas are trying to undo the contamination of the grihastha period, and the sannyasis are completely renounced. And one doesn't even have to get married at all if he wants to avoid it or if he has the adhikar to avoid it. So, from the grihastha perspective, this is destruction, what Narad Muni has done. Daksha Prajapati has worked very hard for many years. Those who are parents know it's not easy thing to raise children. And if you've got one child, it's bad enough, or two or three children. Sometimes families have more than that. My mother had five children. I know some others have 8, 9, 10 children even. Bhaktivinoda Thakur had 13 children in his family. Now Prajapati Daksha had 10,000 sons. That is a lot of work. So you can imagine the energy and the attention and the dedication and, well, the word here is used, tapas, the austerity that he invested in that process. And then this sadhu comes along and maybe in the course of a few days association, he just destroyed everything that Prajapati Maharaj has worked for what? Maybe in those days people lived a long time. Maybe it was hundreds of years. We don't know. You can imagine why he was mad. It used to be, I remember in the 70s, I can say this because I was on Radha Damodar traveling Sankirtan party, that the party used to come through and clean the temple out of all of its brahmacharis and then move on and chant Hare Krishna and be happy. And the temple presidents were furious. So we've seen this very thing. It's not a new thing. Prabhupada has pointed out here in his purport. Anyway, he's also said this is not a new struggle. It's been going on for many, many, many years. Here he says, this animosity between the parents and the Krishna consciousness movement has existed since time immemorial. Of course, Srila Prabhupada is writing this in the 1970s. In those days, they were accusing the devotees of brainwashing children, and they had a whole group of a convenient alliance between psychologists and Christians and parents, that they would try to convince some judge that the kid had gone crazy, and they would deprogramming, which was in effect what they were accusing us of, brainwashing. And they would pay big money, so it was you might say an iron triangle of expedience there. But generally the devotees, they couldn't do it. Any other group they could dissuade them, but Krishna consciousness, these people are hopeless. From the grihastha mate, from the grihastha perspective, grihamedi's perspective, I should say. Anyway, so this has been going on for a long time. And these are some things that the acharyas have said about it. Now, anuvatapyata, the word is here used. He lamented. He burned is what the word actually means. What does tapas mean? Tap. Suryas tapati madbhayat. The sun burns in the sky out of fear of the Supreme Lord. And when we execute austerities, it's like burning. No pain, no gain. So this is called tapas. But by extension, this is the process that Daksha Maharaj also underwent. As Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur again says, Hanta hanta tadrishe me putra naradena bhrangshita iti. Yeah, I've worked hard to have such nice sons, and this Narada came in and spoiled everything. Iti vilalapa. Thus he lamented. So, anuvatapyata in this verse means he lamented. So, as I mentioned, let's look at Bhagavad Gita to see what it has to say about this phenomenon. In chapter 18, we hear Krishna kind of reiterating a lot of the things that he said earlier in chapters 17 and in chapter 14 as well. And in particular, in chapter 30, or in verse number 32, he says, well, actually 31, sorry. He says, yaya dharmam adharmam cha karyam cha karyam eva cha. Ayatavat prajanati buddhi sa partha rajasi. O son of Pritha, that understanding which cannot distinguish between religion and irreligion, the word is used dharma and adharma, since we're talking about potentially swadharma bhrangsha, according to Sri Darswami, between action that should not be done and action that should be done is in the mode of passion. And here's the real thing. Adharmam dharmam iti ya manyate tamasavrata sarvarthan vitviparitamscha buddhisa parthatamasi. That means that understanding which considers irreligion to be religion and religion to be irreligion under the spell of illusion and darkness and strives always in the wrong direction, O Partha, is in the mode of ignorance. Now, as Prabhupada's purport here says, intelligence in the mode of ignorance is always working in the opposite of the way it should. It accepts religions which are not actually religions and rejects actual religion. Men in ignorance understand a great soul to be a common man and accept a common man as a great soul. They think truth to be untruth and accept untruth as truth. In all activities, they simply take the wrong path. Therefore, their intelligence is in the mode of ignorance. T.S. Eliot, a famous poet, he put it quite nicely. He said, from wrong to wrong, the exasperated spirit proceeds, unless restored by some refining fire in which one must act in measure like a dancer. What does that mean? It means when we're bewildered, when we're in the bodily concept of life, we don't know what to do. We take the wrong thing and call that the right thing and vice versa. From wrong to wrong, the exasperated spirit proceeds. Until restored by some refining fire. The word here is used again, fire, tapas. Unless we accept the path of austerity, which is the essence of the nivritti marg, even if we perfectly follow the pravritti marg, we will not be reformed. We will remain in the bodily concept of life. Just to make it round here, let's go back to text number 30 of the same chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Pravrittim cha nivrittim cha karya karye bhaya bhaye bandham moksham cha yaveti buddhi sa partha sattviki. We've already talked about rajasic and tamasic intelligence. Let's talk about sattvic intelligence. Oh, son of Pritha, that understanding by which one knows what ought to be done and what ought not to be done, and what is to be feared and what is not to be feared, what is binding and what is liberating, that is in the mode of goodness. Now, in his purport here, Srila Prabhupada says, performing actions in terms of the directions of the scriptures is called pravritti. Pravritti. Is this getting complicated? Or executing actions that deserve to be performed. And actions which are not so directed are not to be performed. Therefore, Daksha was right. As I said, you cannot say one of them was right or one of them was wrong. And unless you are looking at it in terms of the eternal, which one should. Which one should. But even then, Daksha Maharaj has an argument because, according to Acharya's commenting on this verse in the Bhagavatam, he says that generally one considers that one cannot take sannyas unless he has gone through the grihastha experience and is renounced through the school of hard knocks. And there's a lot of merit in that. That is why the Varnashram system exists. And it's, of course, it's not for no reason that even our own Srila Prabhupada called it the remaining 50% of his mission. That's something to think about also. So, what do we do in Krishna consciousness when we have different philosophical understandings, or different ideological understandings at least, and these become absolute? Because after all, in Krishna consciousness, everything is absolute, isn't it? Brahmarpanam brahmahavir brahmahagno brahmanahutam brahmanateva tena gantavyam brahmakrana samadhina. Those who have read Bhagavad Gita know. Everything that we do in Krishna consciousness takes on an absolute significance, which means that if you have a conflict with another Vaishnava, you have an absolute conflict. And the consequences are also absolute. Now, I don't have the solution to all the world's problems or all of ISKCON's problems, so I won't volunteer that. But there is at least one nice verse in the fourth canto that I thought it would be nice to share here. This is when Indra had stolen the sacrificial horse of Maharaj Prithu. Because Indra, generally when one becomes too powerful, Indra begins to get nervous for his position. He sees there's competition on the way. Sometimes we also do this in this material world, isn't it? That's something that we all need to think about. So he was wrong, of course. Indra became the first bogus sannyasi, Srila Prabhupada comments in that passage. By disguising himself as a sannyasi and then taking off with a sacrificial horse, simply so that he would be the only one who is called Shatakratu. What does Shatakratu mean? He performed 100 Ashwamedha yajnas. So he didn't want Prithu Maharaj to get that position as well. He wanted it to keep it to his, he wanted it to be unique, as we all do. Anyway, so in text number 18 of chapter 20 of the fourth canto, the verse is, as King Indra was standing by, he became ashamed of his own activities and fell down before King Prithu to touch his lotus feet. But Prithu Maharaj immediately embraced him in great ecstasy and gave up all envy against him for his having stolen the horse meant for the sacrifice. Now there's a wonderful purport here by Srila Prabhupada. He says, there are many cases in which a person becomes an offender at the lotus feet of a Vaishnava and later becomes repentant. Not just disagreeing with someone, but actually offending someone on the basis usually of such disagreement. Here also we find that although the King of Heaven Indra was so powerful that he accompanied Lord Vishnu, he felt himself a great offender for stealing Prithu Maharaja's horse that was meant for sacrifice. An offender at the lotus feet of a Vaishnava is never excused by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are many instances illustrating this fact. Ambarish Maharaj was offended by Durvasa Muni, a great sage and mystic yogi, and Durvasa also had to fall down at the lotus feet of Ambarish Maharaj. I'm just going to finish this purport, and then we'll end because it's late now. Indra decided to fall down at the lotus feet of King Prithu, but the king was so magnanimous a Vaishnava that he did not want Maharaj Indra to fall down at his feet. Instead, King Prithu immediately picked him up and embraced him, and both of them forgot all the past incidents. Both King Indra and Maharaj Prithu were envious and angry with each other. Should I read that again? Both King Indra and Maharaj Prithu were envious and angry with each other. Now, one of them is the King of Heaven, and the other one is an empowered incarnation of the Supreme. But since both of them were Vaishnavas, or servants of Lord Vishnu, it was their duty to adjust the cause of their envy. This is also a first-class example of cooperative behavior between Vaishnavas. In the present days, however, because people are not Vaishnavas, they fight perpetually among one another and are vanquished without finishing the mission of human life. There is a great need to propagate the Krishna consciousness movement in the world so that even though people sometimes become angry and malicious toward one another, because of their being Krishna conscious, such rivalry, competition and envy can be adjusted without difficulty. So, as we know, amongst the last instructions Srila Prabhupada gave, I already mentioned one of them, is you have to develop Varnashram Dharma. Another one he said is you have to cooperate amongst yourselves after I go. And ISKCON has done much better than the Gaudiya Math in that regard. Of course, there's always room for improvement. I'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions or comments on any of this? Yes, Shachi Tanoi Prabhu.
Thank you for your nice presentation, Prabhu. I had a question that probably was answered in your last comment, but maybe you can say something about. When we have difficulties or troubles, it's normally recommended that we always check Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Now, when internal problems are there, and devotees are familiar with Sadhus, Gurus, and Shastras, and each of them, different parties might quote something to favor their points of view, then what to do? And just like Prabhupada later on also mentioned in some comment that Daksha was very expert in doing what he was doing because he was ordered to do that. So he also says that Narada Muni is very expert.
Yeah.
So two experts are apparently conflicting. So maybe you can add something extra.
This is a very good question. Of course, just as Prithu Maharaj and Indra are very highly placed personalities within the Bhagavatam. Similarly, Prajapati Daksha and Narad Muni, also very august personalities, but sometimes there is a difference of opinion. Even amongst Vaishnava acharyas, sometimes, not just Vaishnavas of different sampradayas, but even within the same sampradaya, sometimes there are different Vaishnava opinions as well. Equally and solidly based on Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Yesterday I was reading in the deity worship conference, one devotee had posted his opinion based on Shastra and backed up with quotes from Srila Prabhupada in his books that one should not have Guru Puja in front of the deity in the temple. Now we've been doing this for 30, 40 years in ISKCON. It's something that Prabhupada himself was engaged in, and yet you can't argue with these quotes either. And there's not only Shastras are quoted, but Guru and Sadhu also, and tradition as well. There are four actually given in the chapter 17, I think, maybe 19 of the 11th canto. Four pramans that we use. This is what Krishna taught Uddhava. One of them is Shabda, Pratyaksha, Anuman, and the fourth one is Aitihya, Itihasa, tradition, history. So, it's true. I mean, there are differences of opinion. Therefore, it's of paramount importance that we simply learn, just like you see the bumper sticker, coexist, simply learn how to respect other Vaishnavas and coexist and work it out somehow or other. As I mentioned in the beginning, alternative dispute resolution. That's very important. Of course, it should always be carried out along theistic lines and on the basis of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, because in chapter 17 of Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada says this is how we speak in spiritual circles. That's my answer. Archita Prabhu, you want to add something to that? Yeah.
In this particular case, the founder Acharya set the example himself by allowing it to happen for himself. So we're continuing that tradition. We're worshiping Srila Prabhupada, not anybody else, in front of the deities.
Yeah.
That's Prabhupada said that example, so we follow that. So if you want to be a follower of Srila Prabhupada, then you follow that. If you, 30 years later, come up with some objection, then your only alternative is to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
You can't change ISKCON at this point, because Prabhupada already established that, and we're following that tradition. That's also become tradition.
Yeah.
Now you have everything included in that one action. You have the founder Acharya, you have tradition, it's all there. So if you don't like that particular tradition, then your only alternative is to go somewhere else. You can't change that. So a lot of things are like that. Prabhupada has established, for instance, that he wanted his books edited. If you don't like that, then I'm sorry. Either you just keep reading the 72 books or 74 books, or go somewhere else. Prabhupada established he wanted his books edited and polished. He said it himself. He said it himself.
Jai.
Hare Krishna.
It sounds like you resolved this very well. Yeah. Yeah, that's, as I said, the conflicts become very, very acute in Krishna consciousness because they take on this absolute importance, at least in the eyes of the of those who are convinced of their... The nice word is used in that verse I quoted from 11th canto, bhidartha nishtha. Hyastiti nastiti bhidartha nishtha. They're each fixed in their views. Even though their views are based on incomplete realization, still they're completely fixed. And vyarthopi naivoparameta punsam. Although this kind of argument above your head, you know, talking over our heads about things that we haven't yet realized, although it's ultimately useless, futile, still they're unable to give it up, whether because of ego or politics or money or whatever, we don't know. But it's difficult. Okay, so I should stop now. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.